Welcome to season 6 of the RAG podcast. Now, for those of you who don't know, the RAG stands for Recruitment Agency Growth, and this show has been around since early 2019. And every week, we are obsessed with finding out how the world's most successful and innovative recruitment agencies and their founders have got to where they are today. In season 6, alongside the founder's story and the inside information of that business, I also want to focus on the reality of today's economy. There is so much noise about this inevitable recession that we find ourselves in right now. And where it's going to go, is it really having an impact on the recruitment sector? Are they seeing any change in job flow? Are they seeing any change in candidate control or activity? What is going on? I want to find out. So, every single week, I want to forget the propaganda, forget the noise. I'm going to speak to a real-life recruitment owner and find out what is going on in their business. I'll bring it to you every single Wednesday from 12 o'clock across multiple platforms. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the RAG podcast. On this week's show, I am excited, delighted, honored to be joined by Greg Savage. Now, almost everyone in our sector globally knows who this guy is. He's got an incredible brand. He's an advisor to 16 recruitment organizations in the Asia Pac region. He's owned and scaled 3 organizations in the past. He's an author of a book and has his own training academy across the recruitment community globally. I interviewed Greg at the beginning of the pandemic. He was the second person I brought onto the RAG Report, which was my daily show, if you remember, in 2020, to add some advice to our community in a time of need. On today's episode, we talked about the work that he did in the pandemic, the advice he gave, what he would give now, and the reality of the current economic changes. We talked about Greg's book. We talked about Greg's experience, and he gave some absolute golden nuggets of information. He specifically went into the metrics that you should be measuring to ensure that your business is scaling profitably. So he said the number one reason he gets involved with businesses is because they grow GP, but not profit. So they scale without profit, or grow without profit. And Greg gave some unbelievable advice as to how you can manage that and the reasons why it might be worth getting an advisor like Greg or someone in your local region to help you if you're seeing certain symptoms. So listen to everything he's got to say. The guy is full of wisdom and experience. Take it on board, take some notes, and I hope you have, you get as much value as I did recording it. So without further ado, Greg, welcome back to the RAG podcast.
Oh, it's very nice to be here, Sean. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. It was right in the heart. It was actually the second episode, I think, I recorded in the pandemic, right in the either the last week of March or the first week of April. I was sat there thinking, I need to do something here. And I didn't know what I could do. The only thing I thought was my podcast was pretty well listened to at the time, nowhere near what it is now. Could I go daily with the show? And I went daily, and you were episode 2. And I was like, right, I need to get older people that can add some form of wisdom to what's going on.
Yes, well, unfortunately, I'm pretty confident I didn't supply you any wisdom at the time. I don't remember the detail of that podcast, so if you're going to refer back to what we spoke about that day, you'll have to remind me. But I do remember doing it, and of course, I remember the time and the feeling and the communication I was having with my clients and what it was like. So we can refer back to that if you wish.
Well, ultimately, I think the biggest sentiment you said was, look, it's the unknown, right? And I remember you saying, if you're going to cut, you're going to cut deep and cut quick. You're not going to regret trimming the fat and being lean and being prepared for the worst. And we obviously didn't know. We only had the 2008s and 2001s to compare this to. And it was, so how did it unfold? That's my question for you, is how did in your opinion or your experience in your portfolio, how did the market unfold?
Well, I will explain that to you, but you just said something that's really important, which I want you to make a note of and come back on. The advice I gave my clients and anyone who would listen, because I was just giving everything I could when COVID came, is not the exact same advice I'd give now with an impending downturn, because COVID came from nowhere, blindsided us. Revenues dropped like, 60, 70, 80%. And it was a survival in the moment. Whereas we've been talking about a recession for a year. I mean, I was in the UK in August and they were terrified about a recession. We've been talking. So you've had a long time to prepare. So the advice will be different. But so you can come back to my advice for now when you're ready. But at that time, I guess the best little anecdote I will tell you is I recognized once, I was in denial about this, you know, virus, you know, how can it? But when we started getting lockdowns and when people started to panic, I started talking to my clients and most of them were way, way behind in their thinking. And I remember talking to one of my biggest clients, it's a company I actually founded. I'm no longer a shareholder. They got 125 staff. And I spoke to the CEO, who's a very, very good friend of mine. I'm on his board. And he said, look, Greg, I think it was about March 2020, of course, may have my months wrong. And he said, look, I'm just going to wait till the end of April. And I said to him, mate, if you don't act today, you will lose your company and your house. So my advice is get the management team on a Zoom and we talk today. And we did. And he still harks back to that day and says, you terrified the shit out of me. But what we did was we took actions that didn't protect us against what was going to happen, but mitigated it dramatically. And really, it was a mixture of that. With some of my clients, honestly, look, I'm not being facetious when I say this, but I had grown men and women crying in shock. And not only in financial shock, but in shock about what they were going to have to do to survive to their people and with their people. Because, you know, I mean, you've been a recruiter. I don't know all about your history, but 75 cents out of every dollar that we spend is on salaries. So there's only one lever to pull when your revenue drops by 50%.
Yeah.
And so it was calming people. It was getting people, you know, it's like the deer in the headlights sort of syndrome. People were nervous to act. We're still trying to convince ourselves that this thing would go away in a month. I mean, there were plenty of people, me included. I mean, none of us knew it would last that long. No. So we were like, can we last 3 months, etc. So it was calming people down. It was taking actions. And then it was quickly flipping once the action has been taken to reassure the rest of the people that we had and to give the right supports. Remember, people were then working from home. We were in lockdown in many cases in this country anyway. And it was just a whole new world. So most of my clients, all of them pretty much, well, all of them got through, but a lot of them actually came out the other side stronger.
Yeah.
And have benefited in the upturn.
What we noticed in the UK, I don't know if it was exactly the same, I think it was similar, is whilst there was that really difficult short-term 3-4 month period, it bounced back really quick. And even though our lives were still disrupted, we were still working remotely from home, and business actually started to pick up really, really quickly. And I think by the time it got to the end of 2020, some of my clients were you know, recording record months, even though they were all at home. And they were like, and then the UK went back into lockdown at the end of 2020, and we were like facing this 4 month, you know, severe lockdown. But business was different. It was actually really buoyant.
You're right. In my experience, it really differed depending on what vertical you were in. So IT recruitment clients, and I know you interviewed one of them. I haven't unfortunately listened to your most recent podcast, but people told
Greg.
Me. Yeah, I know. I've got a lot of work to do. I'm a big talker, not a great listener. It's one of my big problems. But I know you interviewed one of my clients, and that particular Simon is an example of, at that time you're talking about, we were like, wow, something's actually working. It was because IT and SAP and data and the stuff that they were doing, you know, everyone was in shock for the first 3 months, but then it bounced back. But those who were in like legal support, business support, it was not buoyant even then. You know, it was tough because we had long periods. I mean, in Melbourne, I think they had something like 385 days of lockdown during COVID.
Yeah.
In Victoria, right? So that's 28 or something like 35% of the country's economy. So it's huge, right? Sydney wasn't much better. And borders were closed. We couldn't travel to other states for a year.
Yeah.
So it really disrupted things. And if you were in those white collar support type functions recruiting, it was extremely tough. And honestly, if it hadn't been for government support, most of them would either have had to mortgage their houses or go bust because there was no revenue for a long time.
So how long have you been an advisor as opposed to being the leading the
So I sold my last business. I've been really had three big, well, yeah, they were quite big businesses, but three goes at running recruitment companies, owning them since the 80s. And I sold the last one 9 years ago. And I made the decision, I was in my 50s already, but I made the decision, I don't really want to go that hard a slug of running and starting a business again. So I offered myself as an advisor. And, you know, I'm in that position with 16 companies now on the boards. Most of them have been for 5 years or more. And we're on a journey. Some of them we have exited, sold. In some cases, I become a shareholder. I've also helped start a few businesses. And so I'm very active. I'm not only an advisor. In many cases, I'm an owner. So that keeps you sharp, right? Because you're on the inside.
What's going through my head is in a time like COVID, when you're not necessarily on the phone impacting things like with clients, but you, as in your portfolio's clients, but you're there as that advisor. What skills did you need to, or what did you need to think about for yourself to ensure that you were the best version of you for them?
Well, you know, I had a choice. I don't need to work. So I could have just gone to my holiday house and sat it out, or just sat in the study and, you know, read books and watched replays of rugby World Cups. And I didn't do those things because that would be incredibly selfish. And because while I'd never been through COVID, I've been through a lot of downturns. And I could offer the voice of reason. So I don't know if you remember, but at that time, I put out more content to the community than I ever did. I did about 50 podcasts in that year for guys like you.
Yeah.
And I did it not because, you know, I really wanted to do a podcast, but I hoped it would help. And then what I also realized was, and this is in retrospect, honestly, my job is to help companies grow. And a lot of recruitment company owners have done a good job getting to a certain level, but they can't take it to the next level. And that's my sweet spot. But actually, when I look at COVID, I was probably more valuable in that 2 year period than any other time in my advisory career. Because I didn't have all the answers. I'm not cleverer than anyone else, but I've got a lot of, you know, battle scars, and I was able to see from the outside what they needed to do. And when you're on the inside, it's hard. So making decisions around costs, making decisions about office space, making decisions about commission structures, pay, cash flow, clients, you know, which clients to focus on. And, you know, AX had to get rid of some clients during COVID because they weren't paying their bills and stuff like that. So these are very hard decisions for people to make. Seems logical, but it's hard. And empathy. And, you know, one of the things I started doing quite soon was just reminding people that, you know, it was a catchphrase in a way. I said, the sun will shine on recruitment again. And I meant it because I've been through recessions and you're always at the bottom. You cannot believe it's ever going to get better, but it always does. And it did, and it got better much quicker and better than I thought it would, to be honest. But yeah, the sun did shine on. And so we were also, once we'd stabilized the ship, so to speak, it was then preparing to take advantage of the upturn. And I think a lot of my, like Precision is a great example, but there are plenty of others. I only mentioned them because they were on your podcast this week. Their business is literally 3-4 times more profitable and stronger than it was in 2019. So they've done a great job. Now, the market helped, but it wasn't only that. Not all boats rise on the tide, you know. They did some smart things.
Yeah, I agree. Well, when it comes to the career or the kind of trajectory and lifestyle of a recruitment business owner, like you've been there, you said you've had three goes at it. You said you don't even need to work, right? You must deal with a lot of people who are, you know, maybe similar age to me, 30, in the 30s and 40s, that are looking to eventually exit and swan off into the sunset. What's your kind of approach to people who see that like in and out mindset? Because I find there's two types of people. There's often people that the career, they just love it. And there's others that are just like, I want to build as quick and as fast and as aggressively as I can to get the hell out of it. Yeah. How do you deal with those people?
Well, you're right in the first part of what you said, in that almost all the people I talk with are in their 30s and 40s. They have built a good, strong business. My typical client is 15 to 100 staff, and the companies want to take them to the next level.
Yeah.
Very few of them, Sean, actually have a, I want to be out of here in 3 years mindset. Right. Most of them are really embedded in their businesses. In fact, I have to counsel them to think about an exit in many cases.
Right.
And it's not even an exit. I have to counsel them to think about what their goal is, because often they're not sure. And what I say to people, and it's actually quite valuable advice, is that building a business that's sustainable, which means it doesn't depend on the day-to-day operations of the owners. The best thing about that is it gives you as an owner choice. And choice is more valuable than anything. People think about money, you know, and money's, you know, I'm not saying it's not important, it's part of it, but creating wealth gives you choice, and creating a sustainable recruitment business, so the one that's got annuity income, multiple revenue earners, a good spread of clients, the right margins, and a second tier of management, those are the key things, which most people can't build. 80% of recruitment companies in the world have less than 10 staff. So they don't have that. They're lifestyle businesses. When you do that, you've got a choice. If you're owning that business, so let's give you an example of an imaginary business, but I'm thinking of one. So a business that might have 40 staff, it's got 60% of its GP in temp and contract. It's got a second and even a third tier of management. That owner, in fact, or two of them in this case, they can choose, we've done well, we're making a lot of money, let's go further. Let's expand. Let's open more offices. Let's diversify. Let's take over the world. That's one choice. Or one of them could sell to the other. Or they could keep a general manager in place and they can go grow olives in the Hunter Valley and just live off very significant dividends. Or they could sell it at a significant multiple. So there's five choices or whatever I just said for that. Now, most recruitment company owners listening to this do not have any choice at all other than come in the next day and do what they did yesterday.
Yeah.
And that's what I speak to people about. What do you want? What's your goal? Occasionally, and I do have a client now, he's in his 60s and the business is run by somebody else. And he has said, Greg, let's sell this in 3 years. But he's had it for 20.
Yeah.
It's not as if he's just trying to do a quick flick. He's now saying, and funny, you know, you can't pretty up a business to sell, because there'll be due diligence and buyers are much smarter than they were a decade ago, and they will see the flaws in it. So you have to build a very sound business that will survive the scrutiny of due diligence, and people will see that it's really worth what it's worth to get the best multiple. I mean,
makes sense. I think what I'm getting at as well is you've had the experience of finishing off and saying, well, you know, I could stop working, but you've chose to carry on. And do you ever advise people or talk about that in terms of the second horizon, that actually when you finish, what you might feel like? Because the amount of people I've interviewed on my podcast that have sold their businesses and said it's probably the most underwhelming experience they've ever had, and then they've quite quickly gone back in and built another one or done something else. It's like, it's as if this, people just see this exit sunset moment, but it might not quite be what they're expecting.
Oh, I have that conversation all the time, and I ask them what they'll do when they exit. Hmm. And they often don't, you know, there's some somewhat mythical dream of some sort of a life, but... Hmm. You know, they've got to remind themselves, and I do it for them. I remind them that they get their affirmation and they get their self-worth, not financial worth, but human worth, from the job they do. And they like their people a lot and they care about what happens to them. You know, I've been through this. I started my first business, which was called Recruitment Solutions, with two other guys when I was 27. Hmm. And 10 years later, we listed on the Australian Stock Exchange with a really successful IPO. So I was in my late 30s.
Wow.
It could have stopped then. I'm not a wealthy man. It's not about the money, but I mean, and then People to People, which is a business I founded that's now turning over 120 million. I've never actually done a day's work in my life, other than as an advisor. I mean, that was the second big one. So you do need to think about, so for me, why am I working? Well, I love recruitment. I find every day interesting because I've got a call on my experience and my skill, because you can't just tell people, right? You know, it's not your job just to say, do this. It's a journey when people are working out, for example, expansion and all these sorts of things. So it's fun, but I wouldn't want to go back and run a recruitment company because it's extremely hard.
Yeah.
and draining.
What was it like in your late 30s when you did list? Can you take us back to that time?
So it was a different world. So in the Australian context, there'd only been three recruitment companies that had ever listed prior to this. I think we were the fourth. So one was called Morgan & Banks, which is hugely successful. And Jeff Morgan lives about 300 meters down that way. I see him most mornings. and the other one was skilled engineering. And then Recruitment Solutions was the kind of Johnny come lately. And there was a good example because we went through the recession in the early 90s. Nearly we had expanded really quickly. So we had started with nine of us, and 3 years later, there was about 75 in four offices or five offices. That's 3 years. And we were turning over. The numbers are in my book. I can't remember right now. So, but let's say it was 30 million or something. No, maybe not that much. Maybe 15 million. And then the recession came and halved the business. Right. And 60% of recruitment companies in Australia went bust. But we kept the hardcore of our people. And when the market recovered, then it was a great opportunity to take market share. And we built a magnificent temp business. We were paying 1,000 temps a week by the time we listed. And that's what gave it the appeal to investors. And we were still small fry. I mean, we were a tiny business, really. I think we went to sales of 60 million, but that was 35 years ago. And after you go public, and actually, this is where people think that listing is an exit. It's not an exit because people invest in your company because they want you to triple their share price, right?
Yeah.
And you still have shares in the company because they make sure you do. And so it's a journey. And I think we did okay after that. We didn't do, you go to the stock market so that you can raise funds to expand through acquisition, etc. I don't think we did a great job of that, to be honest. And it's very different being a public company, and I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy the scrutiny. I mean, all our numbers were great, but literally you'd walk down the street and some guy would say, "What are you doing about my share price?" You know, and that would piss me off, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
So you got an answer to fund managers and all the rest of it. But that's okay. It was a great experience. Very proud of that business.
How long were you there after that? How long did you stay?
I stayed 2.5 years. When I left, I took 2 years off and I said I wasn't going to stay in recruiting, and I went sailed down the Amazon with a friend of mine, and I went to the Rugby Cup World Cup in England in 1999. Australia won. Sean, just thanks for asking.
I thought you were a South African fan.
I backed two horses in all these races.
You're pretty.
Yeah, the two best ones. Well, I got two possibilities. It's when they play each other that it gets a bit tricky.
Yeah.
So then after that, and I don't know whether this is kind of boring, but after that, I joined a company called Aquent, and that was a global company. And we had five offices. I was the international CEO, which was an American, what Americans call the business outside of America. You become the international CEO. That was a tiny part of their business. But we did grow to 35 offices in 17 countries. So that was a massive learning and a lot of fun.
How did you find working as a technically as an employee for a business?
I wasn't an employee. I found it difficult, but what to the credit of the CEO who owned the business, once he trusted me, he treated me like a partner. He still told me, no, you can't, or yes, you can. He treated me like a partner, and he gave me a lot of room once the results were coming in. So I was 10 years there. And to be fair, when I took over that business, it was five offices in Australia and one in and New Zealand. And when we finished, it was 35 in 17 countries. So it was a big journey. It went from 5 million turnover to 120 million US.
Wow.
So that was a good – and then we got hammered by the recession in 2009. So that allowed me to do a management buyout of that company, and I started another company called Firebrand. So anyway, look, I don't think this really needs to be about – all that old history. It's more I suppose.
I'll be honest, I'm interested in that though. I think one of the biggest thing that we get from this show is we get wisdom, we get experience, we get knowledge, we get stories from people that have been in positions that others want to be. So the majority of the listeners are thinking, I want my business to survive, I want my business to thrive, and I want some form of exit or some form of wealth creation. And I'm the same in that position. But it's brilliant to listen to people that have been through it and say, maybe this won't be what you think. Like, I'll give you an example. I was in LA about in September, and I'm in an Uber, and this guy, I jumped in an Uber and I looked at this guy and I thought, he's got to be the oldest Uber driver I've ever seen. Anyway, I started speaking to him and he was the nicest guy. And I said, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you? And he said, 87. I said, 87? I said, why are you driving Uber? He goes, I retired when I was 58. I sold my company. So he had 300 staff in a property development portfolio and a load of agent, realtor agent businesses, made millions. He said, in He retired. He had a great time. Him and his mates, he had 12 friends that all retired around the age of 58 to 60. And he said they had a brilliant time. He said, but within 12 years, they all died, every one of them. And he said, after that, he realized he wished he'd never retired, because all of his, he'd much rather be involved in his business than, and now he does Uber just to speak to people, just to get out of the house. But the wisdom from this guy, I got stuck in traffic and I didn't want to get out of the car. I loved it. And, you know, people think retirement is some kind of golden time, but I don't know. I quite like the thought of the way, like with the way you've kept yourself in. I think so many people need to realize that you've got to keep yourself in.
Yeah, look, I think that's really important. I've got friends my age, some of whom have retired, and they're not very happy, and they've got enough money.
Yeah.
So I don't even factor retirement in. I don't even know what it really means for me, because frankly, if I retired from tomorrow, I have not got enough, and I'm happy to say it, I do not have enough interests and hobbies to keep the pace of life that I'm used to.
Yeah.
So I'd have to engineer that and start all that. I got lots of hobbies and interests, but I like what I do, and I'm cutting back on certain things, and next year I'm traveling a lot more. But I love talking about recruitment. I love helping recruitment companies grow, and I love being part of the decisions that people make to succeed. And it gives me satisfaction to see it. And you know, not every time we don't get it right, but you know, a lot of the companies I've been involved with have done extraordinarily well. And they've done extraordinarily well because they work hard and they're smart. But at some pivotal points, I've really been able to help. And that's fun, you know, that's good fun. Yeah.
What do you normally, what symptoms would be in a recruitment business that's growing that means they probably should look at getting an advisor? What would be the road signs that says maybe you need to go out and get someone to help?
That's a great question. I would say the sorts of things that I see, and bear in mind that almost everything I talk to you about now, I have made these mistakes myself. And sometimes multiple times, because I'm a slow learner myself. I think profitless growth is your first sign. And what I mean by that is, and I've sat in 1,000 board meetings, mate, and that's actually not an exaggeration, where we're talking about revenue growth and GP growth, and everyone's getting excited. And it takes someone like me to say, but, and even maybe profit growth. But then someone like me will say, hey, well, we used to turn over 20 million, we made 2 million. Now we're turning over 100 million, we're making 2.5 million. Are we happy? And it's not a good thing. So profitless growth. And what it means is we keep our eye on sales and GP growth, but we're not keeping our eye on margin and on costs. And typically what it is that you then have, and this is typical of most recruitment companies, a small little band of high performers, a small band of underperformers who are on the way up or on the way out, and a vast rump of mediocre recruiters.
Yeah.
And that is what's the sign of a company that needs advice. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, this whole discussion around margins.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the first board meeting I had with your mate Simon Hare was I told them to fire their biggest client. And that was a very awkward fucking conversation, you know, but it was the right thing to do. And to their credit, they did do it. So there's profitable business. PSAs or PSLs, as they call it in your country, are one of the most distracting things in our industry. The thing I would say to anyone listening to this, if you are going for a PSA or a PSL, remember that the first letter stands for preferred. And if you are not preferred, in other words, you don't get good margins, you don't get paid on time, and you don't get guaranteed access to jobs, why are you giving away your margin, particularly in a candidate type market? So a lot of that is where people need advice. And then building a second tier of management is where people just cannot seem to get it. And quite often it's because the owner is in the wrong job. The owner or the owners often think they've got to be the MD, et cetera. And quite often what you have is someone who is a great recruiter, but a poor manager trying to manage the business. And that's where you've got to, they need advice to say, listen, you're the boss, you're the owner, you're great with clients, you love it. Let's make you director of client operations and CEO, but let's get a GM or an MD in to actually run the consultants, because that person's so much better at it. So those sorts of conversations, market expansion. Geez, the amount of people who want to expand geographically, it's you know, COVID put the boot into that. But people want to, you know, I'm in Sydney and I'm in the financial services market, and I've got 8 consultants, and I'm going to open in New York. And I'm like, why would you do that? New York's a huge market, Greg. Are you mad? I said, mate, you've got 1% of the Sydney market. How about growing that? So those sorts of conversations can really open up people's eyes. There's nothing wrong with expanding geographically, but you've got to have a plan. There's got to be a reason. There's got to be an upside.
Yeah.
Typically, people grow and get less profitable, more risk, and more stress.
Yeah. So what is the sweet spot, would you say, for a recruitment firm in terms of profit margins?
Are you asking me what percentage they should make of their sales?
Yeah.
As well?
Yeah.
I'll tell you. So first of all, you've got to understand that I'm talking about a sustainable recruitment company. And that means one that has more than 50% of its gross profit or net fee income, as your English listeners might call it, coming from a temporary or contract operations.
Right.
If you've got a business that's 90% permanent, your profit margin will be incredibly high. And you might fool yourself into thinking you've got a great business. But if a recession comes, you lose 60% of your GP and there's three of you left working around your kitchen table. So if you want a sustainable recruitment company, you want to have more than 50%, preferably 60% of your gross profit, not your sales, coming from temporary and contract, or if you're like...
recurring revenue, yeah.
Recurring revenue, right? So assume we've got that. 5% is what people, you got to run a good recruitment company, you're getting 5%. So that means, if you're turning over 10, if you're turning over 10 million, that's sales. So that's an EBIT margin. That's a percentage of sales that ends up as profit. So 10 million sales, I'll make about 500, 5%. That's okay. That's thanks for coming. 7.5 would put you, I would say, what that means is for every dollar you invoice, you get 7.5 cents as profit. That would put you in the top 25 percentile. And 10% is pretty much best practice. If you can grow a sustainable business of any size that's giving you a 10% return. So you, for example, if you're turning over 100 million in sales and you're making $10 million in profit, that would be outstanding. And that's right. What my companies aim for.
Right.
So we want to get a return. And you need to do that with, the three or four key levers. First of all, don't discount your permanent placement fees. Secondly, keep your temp margin up, and there's plenty of people with big temp businesses running 8, 10, 12% margins and getting paid late.
Yeah.
Fucking ridiculous. And the other thing is productivity per consultant. I mean, these are things we all know. And even a better measure is productivity, i.e. gross profit per employee, is actually a more beautiful measure, because those support people are there for one reason only, to support the consultants to bill. So if you're tracking your gross profit per employee, that'll be a very, very good sign of where you're heading.
What's,
of course,
is there a number there? Is there a sweet spot on that number?
I was just going to say, I'll say the second part of what I was going to say. It's not enough, because you could spend a lot of money, and no matter how much people bill, you're spending more than you're making. So the second thing is your expenses per employee.
Yeah.
And what you said, what's the right number? A big gap between the two is the right number. Right? Because gross profit per employee, if I'm saying business support recruiters in Sydney versus one of my clients is in Singapore and she places lawyers, I mean, her gross profit per employee is that you just can't compare the two. I mean, her people are billing $700,000-$900,000 a year, and there's not many business support recruiters in Sydney doing anything like that. Mm. So, you've got to look at it in the context of the market and the cost base.
I'm interrupting today's episode to bring you a message from our sponsor, Vincere. Vincere, the all-in-one recruitment platform for the most innovative recruitment agencies on the planet. And they've put together a free CRM buyer's guide for you to read, because so many recruitment leaders are looking to upgrade CRMs. But before you sign the contract, be sure to read the terms at least twice. There's so many common traps that you need to watch out for. So not understanding the pricing model is one that always comes up. Discounts limited to only the first year of a contract length is something that companies will throw. What are monthly contracts all about? Could this mean flexibility for the vendor to raise the price in the future? And how is your data hosted? Where is it? Is it anything outside your country? And could it mean compliance and legal issues for you down the line? So you will see the web address to get that right next to this episode. Wherever you're watching this episode, whether it's on LinkedIn, whether it's Apple, Spotify, YouTube, just look below. You'll see the link, click the link and get that free guide. You will not regret learning all of these hacks before making your decision and locking yourself into a new contract with a new supplier. I love it. I think these are the things that especially when you've not got an advisor, you just don't know. Like, these are things you just don't know. You don't, you know, you go out there, especially in the early days, you probably make super margins and ridiculous profit when it's a small group of you and you're just killing it. And then you start to grow. And you said that 80% of the industry doesn't get past 10 is because they don't have that knowledge of what they need to do to get net to that next
that's
level.
That's exactly right. I think most owners of recruitment companies, and you know, I was one, I am one, and I've been in this industry 43 years. Wow. So like, I feel as though I've earned my stripes to criticize, if you want to call it that. But most owners of recruitment companies, if you actually boil it down, the strategic plan is to work fucking hard.
Yeah,
that's their plan. And when I say that to them, I say, that's a given. We need a strategy though. And you need the data. That's what we're not good at in this industry. We need the data. And people go, oh, like, I'm not an accountant. I'm not an accountant either. But I keep it very simple. Like, gross profit per employee. Let's track it month by month. Hey, look, our revenue is going up, but our gross profit per employee is going down because we've hired all these people. Yeah. And our margins, look at our temp numbers. Yeah, we cracked 100 temp or 1,000 temps. But look at our margin quarter by quarter for the last 8 quarters. We've gone from 21 to 14. We're giving it away. What's going on? So you need to think like that and then execute it in the marketplace.
Yeah. Brilliant. Some really good advice there. Some really good advice. If we look at the current climate then, so you're right. It has been, the recession conversation has been on for months. And it's almost one of those things you don't want to talk about too much because you don't want to create too much hysteria that you almost force the recession upon people, but you also don't want to pretend it's not happening either. From my experience, I've been doing this series since about September, and this series is always, I always mention it. I don't focus it on the recession, but I always want to know the reality of what the guest is experiencing right now. And today, it's been a bit up and down. There's been a few really, you know, pessimistic people who are seeing Armageddon. There's been a lot of majority of people actually not feeling too much pain. What have you seen across your portfolio over the last couple of months?
I'll tell you what I've seen, and then I'll tell you what you should do about it. Because it's actually the same for everybody. So there's been a definite softening in the last 3 months, fall off in job orders across most of my clients. And you know, I talk to owners of recruitment companies all day, every day, right? Not only my clients, people. You know, I get 25 questions a week on LinkedIn, and people stop me in the street and I'm speaking at things. And so I'm very fortunate. I'm not saying that to complain. I'm very fortunate because that allows me to, yeah, give my opinion, but to also learn. Right.
So
it's informed, yeah, which is great and makes me feel confident to answer your question. I think that, yes, there's been a decline, some areas more than others, but honestly, and I've said this to so many people in the last few months, it's gone from a boom to just very good. There is great hiring opportunities in this country, right? And one of my clients, and I'm a shareholder, we've just opened an office in London, actually, People to People. And that's a company I founded with a few other guys from Recruitment Solutions. That's a very successful business. They've opened in London. I've been in London this year once. I'm going twice next year. So I'm not close to the UK market, but I speak to people a lot. I think it's the same there. But just remember, it's nothing like doom at all. There is hiring. It's a little harder. You know, I know you're what I'd say to you. I think you're a soccer football guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is great. I'm a West Ham fan, 50 years of disappointment. What can I tell you? But I give my analogies like a rugby one. I love my sporting analogies. You go out and you play rugby 5 Saturdays in a row and the sun's shining. It's a dry field and you play according to a dry field. You swing the ball, you do what you've got to do. You turn up the next week and it's raining. You don't then say, oh, we can't play or we're going to lose. You say, right, change of tactics, change of strategy, different, keep the ball close, kick it deep, whatever it is, right? Change of strategy. And that is the analogy right now for recruitment. Because I tell you this, I don't know if there's going to be a recession or just a downturn. I just know there will be one. I just can't tell you when. There will be one because in 43 years, I've had about 12. So there will be one. I think it's more likely we're going to get one in the next 12 months than any other time prior to COVID. I mean, the 10 years prior to COVID was all boom.
Yeah.
So I think it's likely we'll have one. You don't panic. You don't even think about that much. You think about what we should be doing now, and you should be changing your tactics, just like the football team or the rugby team, change their tactics according to the conditions. And the conditions are So many recruiters have had a year and a half of jobs coming in the door, and it's all been about candidates. And they've lost, their BD muscle has weakened. There are plenty of recruiters in your country and in mine who have never done a client meeting in their lives, and they built 500,000 last year. Now, that is a problem because they don't have the relationships. They don't have the skill to discuss, to seek out and win business. So the advice would be, you know, very simple sort of things like, hey, let's run a list of our 35 biggest clients by GP. Have we visited them all face-to-face? And I know people are going to say it's not much face-to-face going on, but my experience is if you ask and you give them lots of time, they will do it, even if it's a coffee on the one day that they come to the city. And have we seen those people? And the answer will be, no, we haven't. Go and see them. And then run a list, for example, of your next 50 biggest clients. And you'll find that there's a whole lot of them that you that have sort of gone dormant because you've been so busy focusing on the big clients. All those second tier clients, well, we didn't have enough candidates. Now's the time to go say, hey, sorry, I've been a bit absent. Let's connect. Exercising the BD muscle, building the relationships, because when the wheel turns, and I don't know when it will or how deep it will, but it will, there's going to be so many recruiters who don't have the skills to operate.
Yeah.
I would also be, as a business owner, really working out, I would be brick walling my current clients. So in other words, identify those clients that are likely to do well in a downturn or at least be okay and get very, very close to them. Those sorts of actions you take now. Now, if there is no downturn, they're still not actions that are going to, you know, they're still actions that are going to do you good, right?
Yeah, they're not going to do any harm, are they?
Yeah, exactly. So,
When it comes to branding and putting your recruiters out there, like I think we both see the world pretty similarly, right? In terms of using LinkedIn as a tool to scale your voice and amplify your messages. What advice, obviously, you know, the work that I've been doing with Simon and a couple of other clients in your portfolio on it, and we're working with clients all over the world. But what advice do you give on that front? Like what's your opinion on getting your recruiters to share more, to be more valuable, to not just be stuck to the 15 calls a day?
I believe that building a brand online, and yes, it's going to be mostly LinkedIn, but you know, I've got clients who work in the design area and the branding is on Instagram, for example. You've got to work out where your clients are. But building an online brand is absolutely pivotal to both corporate and individual success.
Yeah.
And although everyone can do it and some people pump out some stuff, doing it well is the differentiator. And doing it well will give you untold advantages like inbound inquiries, referrals, recommendations, half open doors to walk through. And I know this for a fact because, you know, apart from my advisory work, I've got a pretty big online brand with my blog and all the rest of it. Yeah. And I could have a team of 60 advisors here and I'd never do the work that comes in the door, honestly. And if I go and speak in London next week, 500 people or 300 people will turn up. Not because I'm anything special, I'm not, but I have a strong brand. So if that's what I did for a living, and it certainly makes money, but that's not my goal, then it's working and it works for recruiters too. So the advice to owners of recruitment companies is take it seriously. Don't pay lip service to it. No. You've got to lead from the front. You don't have to be the biggest poster on LinkedIn, but you need to lead from the front and be digital brand aware. And you need to train people and you need to set them goals and you need to measure it just like you do everything else in your business. And you need to make people accountable for it because it's no different to all the other skills recruiters traditionally have had. It's just a new one.
What makes it really interesting though is obviously you've been in the game, you've been in the industry 43 years.
Yeah.
And what often I find is when people have been in the industry longer, they're a lot more resistant to this. So it's like, well, I never needed this when I started off and we used to use fax machines and blah, blah, blah. And then even LinkedIn 5 years ago, it was more like a CRM online. It wasn't used as a social network. So have you ever had that conversation with people maybe in a similar age bracket to yourself or who've been in the game for a long time who are very resistant? And how do you, especially at the top of the tree?
I mean, look, it's interesting. What you say is true, but trust me, there's 23-year-old recruiters out there who might spend all their life on TikTok and whatever else, but they won't spend 1 minute building their corporate or their business brand.
But they're not. But they're not at the top of the tree. I'm interested. No, in the guys who've got to start. No. You've got to lead from the front. I get your point, but I'm more bothered about because if the lead is not going to play in.
I've had that conversation with so many people of the generation you're talking about.
Yeah.
And countless times. Sometimes I get through and sometimes I don't. And when they start to go down the road of, well, we didn't need that in our day and it's frivolous, I used to get told, you know, it's for teenage girls to post pictures of their lunch or whatever. And I'm like, a telephone can be used in a frivolous way. It can also be used to close a $1 million deal or propose marriage. You know, it depends what you use the tool for. Now, if you use social media, and I was lucky because when I did a management buyout of Acquaint in 2010, because that was after that Lehman Brothers and the big recession at that time. So I ended up being the CEO of Acquaint one day, and the next day I was the CEO of Firebrand, which was 10 of the Acquaint offices in 8 countries.
Right.
And it was like a startup. I mean, we had all the revenue, so we were a profitable business on day one, but we didn't have the backing of Big Brother. We were on our own. So we had to build the marketing for this business with no budget. And so I was forced. I'd already started blogging, and because I was just worried that this new thing was going to be important. And so we built the entire company's brand and all our consultants' brand right across. So we had KPIs and goals for everyone. We created the, and this was 12, 15 years ago, right?
Wow.
12 years ago anyway. And I learned then, because it drove our business growth, I learned then that this is a real thing. And I've tried to communicate that to people and get them to understand that, you know, building a brand is not a frivolous activity, because what they think it is just posting the odd meme on LinkedIn or a joke or a little
sharing
story.
A news or sharing an article that's on.
Yeah, or sharing an article, which, you know, it needs a strategy. I mean, you know, I'm talking to the converted, but you know, from my point of view, it's like going to the gym, building a brand. You can't go to the gym for a month and then say I'm fit. It's forever, right? That's the first thing. You can't go to the gym once a month and expect to see any change. It's 4 times a week.
Yeah.
It's consistent and it's quality. You've got to do the quality stuff. And you've got to engage. It's not just posting and then saying, I'm a hero. You've got to engage with people. And so it takes work. And owners of recruitment companies need to teach people, coach them, encourage them, give them goals, reward them. I don't mean financially, but affirmation for doing good stuff. And you've got to take the view that I'm not going to – see, the thing about our industry is that we're very short-term focused, right? And there's no one in the world who's said more often than me, hey, how many placements have you made this month? There is nobody. So I'm the same. But with this, you're not going to get the returns. But if we run an ad on a job board, we'll get lots of applications. You know, 90% of them will be no good, but we'll feel busy. And we've got to shift that waste of time, start putting our time into things that will give us the return over time.
Yeah. And it is, I mean, obviously that's my whole business model is built around giving people that strategy and working with businesses to say, well, look, like the PM, I say a minimum of 3 times a week, but ideally 5 times a week. And these are the things you can do and how you do it consistently and track it. This is, I mean, we do see the same things, but I there's plenty of people in my generation and younger that are as resistant as anyone. So I completely agree. And they can be owners of businesses. I just think, you know, if you can get 1,000 eyeballs on LinkedIn by writing anything, you know, you can put a job up today and get 1,000 impressions. If you can get 1,000 to get to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 to 10 to 15, whatever, daily is not that difficult in this current LinkedIn world we're in. And like, if you lined up those people outside your office now or your house, that's an incredible amount of people, right? You can't get through them on the phone. And people see that number as if it's just some nonsense number. They're just real human beings. And as long as you're connected to the right people in the right industries, like they're going to be the right people seeing it. And it's a consistent long-term, it's a game changer.
It totally is. And as you say, if you're in a niche or in a community and you're putting out content that is of interest to that community, you will create a perception of yourself which will amplify much faster than you can in, I mean, I'm still for client meetings and telephone and all that. I'm not saying chuck it out, but you get the amplification. It opens doors halfway that you can walk through. You get inquiries that you would never have got. You can build a perception that differentiates you. I mean, one of the things that I often say to recruiters is, one of the things that I've heard 1,000 times in my career is a client saying all recruiters are the same. And whether that's true or not, and it's not, one of the ways to differentiate yourself is with quality content and engagement online.
Yeah.
Often that can lead to an in real life interaction, and then you've got to be good at that too. You can't bluff your way through it forever, but it opens doors, it creates a perception, it differentiates. But we've got to put a long-term effort into it. And, you know, all the companies that I've involved in, I've advised them accordingly. And, you know, some of them, the one we mentioned earlier is a very good example. They really, really worked it and got outside expertise like yourself. And it's paid magnificent dividends for them.
Yeah. Well, it's quite funny as well. Like, people are like, you know, the headhunter stealth mode is what people get confused about. So they're like, I need to be under the radar. So me being online doesn't really... I'm like, no. It's the opposite. You need to be the most well-known guy that when you reach out, they recognize you. And then you need to perform your service in stealth mode. No one needs to know you've had that conversation. You need to be 100% confidential through the process. But being someone they've never heard of goes against you. You know, not...
100%.
It's incredible. 100%.
And I've actually used, this is somewhat, I don't mean this to sound arrogant, but I've actually tried to make that point in speeches with recruiters when I'm trying to sell them what you and I are saying today. I say to them, imagine if I, Greg Savage, was a wreck to wreck. I'm not, and I never will be, but imagine if I was. And I called up some guy sitting at the desk. I'm not saying I'm going to place him, but I will have his ear.
Yeah.
Right? I will have a better chance of that person saying, yeah, I'd like to hear what your pitch, or I'd like to meet you for a coffee. Sure. Because I'm well known in the recruitment industry. And so what I say is, make yourself well known in the whatever industry it is that you're in. Exactly. And so that, as you quite rightly said, there's a big difference to the way you operate as to the way you connect with talent and clients, because the world has changed. And the other, you know, the thing is, credibility and authenticity counts for a huge amount. So it's very important, and I'm sure you say this in your courses, that, you know, the stuff you put out has to be real, valuable, and in your voice, because people are sick of being finessed by charlatans.
So that's the problem with bigger firms, you know, because they can often be like, they want all their employees to follow this corporate messaging, and they want to dampen everyone down and have this vanilla workforce. And I'm like, it's not like going to a meeting and telling people what to say. You've got to let them be them and learn and make mistakes. And it's the same online. It's no different.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a lack of confidence and wanting to control things. I mean, this is quite funny, but it's true. Sometimes I'm walking down the street or I'm at a meeting and someone comes up to me and says, hey, I really like your blog. And I go, oh, thanks, you know. And then they say, I don't agree with anything you say, but at least I know it's you because it's in your voice.
Yeah.
And there is something in that, right? They value it because they know it's my true opinion, right? And they don't agree with it necessarily. Doesn't matter. The point is they value it and they know who I am. So I think that's a lesson. We don't just sort of pump out vanilla sort of stuff. No, don't go and be provocative for the sake of it, anything like that, but have a point of view and say it in your own voice. That's what people value.
I always say, look, the rule of thumb for me is if you put something on LinkedIn or online, be prepared that if someone did stop you in the street or phone you, you could back it up, right? Because if you're creating things that you think are going to get engagement that are not really how you believe, it's going to backfire. And it's about consistently being you. Now, obviously, I know what I think the listeners are starting to know what I do for a living, because I don't talk about it that much on the show, but I'm so passionate about this topic, it does come out a lot. But what we know, you're an advisor to 16 businesses, but you also do other things, right? So your book, The Savage Truth, I see a lot of people posting your book. I think I saw Alex Ferguson with your book. Am I right? Did that happen?
Yeah, there's a good story behind that. That's real, but I don't know Alex Ferguson, so I'll tell you that. But I'll tell you the story about that if you like.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Savage Truth.
And Savage Truth. I got advised by my publisher today that it's just crossed the 10,000 copies sold mark, which I'm really happy about. It's nothing about making money. You don't make money out of a book. And I give the proceeds to charity anyway. But I love the fact that people read it, because I think it's a good story. So you can get that off my website. It's kind of autobiographical, and the story of building those companies I spoke about and all the mistakes. There's a lot of truth about the mistakes I made. I'm at that stage of life that I really don't, I mean, I've got a huge ego, don't get me wrong, but I really don't mind admitting all my mistakes. Because it's just what makes you what you are, right?
Yeah.
What happened with the Alex Ferguson thing was only a few months ago is I got contacted by a guy who owns a recruitment company in the UK. It's a big one. He owns 80% of it, and it turns over £1 billion.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, he contacted me, and I often get this. He was like, hey, I'm making some acquisitions. Can I buy you a coffee? I'd like to just get your opinion on the market. And I say yes, because I want to be helpful, but also I'm going to learn something from a guy like that. Yep. He was a lovely guy. He was a northern guy. He was very humble.
Was it in the UK or was it in Australia?
It was here. He was out here making acquisitions. Anyway, in the course of the conversation, I said, what are you doing here? He said, well, I'm making acquisitions, but actually I'm here looking at horses and we're here for the Melbourne Cup. And actually, confidentially, have you ever heard of Alex Ferguson? I'm like, yeah, I know who he is, of course. And he said, yeah, he's my mate and we've come to buy racehorses. So I'm like, oh. And he said at the end of the meeting, if you ever come to the UK, I'll take you to the box at Manchester United. This is really funny, right? So yeah. I said, I'd love that. I said, I'd love that. You know, I'm a West Ham fan. But then I said in passing, I'm actually more of a rugby guy. He says, oh, I bought the Sale Sharks a few years ago. I could take you there as well. So he owns a rugby club. Anyway, at the end of the meeting, he says to me, is there anything I can do for you? And I said, no, it's because you've been very helpful. I said, no, it's absolutely fine. That's no worries. And I'd given him a copy of the book. He said, would you like me to get Alex Ferguson to hold this book up in a photograph? I said, I think that would be quite nice.
Yeah, he did it.
To his word, right? That afternoon comes that picture, which is taken at the Hyatt Hotel in Sydney. And so I thanked him and I said, do you mind if I put it on social media? He said, LinkedIn only.
Yeah.
So I said, well, that's what I was thinking. It was quite funny. And the amount of DMs I got from people saying, that was Photoshopped. How do you know this guy? I'm like, I don't know.
You should have just milked him. Like, he's my buddy for years.
I think I put on there, Alex Ferguson is brushing up on his management tips from me.
That's amazing. And I mean, 10,000 copies is a real achievement. So people can get, I'll make sure there's a link to that book in the bio and everything connected to this. And then you've also launched the Academy, right? So tell us about, so I've got my Academy and yours is different. So tell us about what you're trying to achieve with that.
You know, a lot of my work life has included training and public speaking about recruitment all over the world, literally, you know, honestly. Probably 50 different countries I've been to speak about recruitment. That's not an exaggeration. There's a chapter on it in the book. And sometimes they get videoed and there was quite a lot of this material around. And I said to a mate of mine who's a bit technical, I said, hey, can we put this up on some sort of platform? Because it's going to go to waste. And when people ask me questions, I'll just refer them to this thing for free. And he said, I'll do it for you, but you shouldn't do it for free. Mm. You should get them to subscribe. So I said, oh, okay. I didn't give any more thought. But after about 6 months, I started realizing people were actually signing up. And as you know, if you've got a kind of a model where people just sign up and pay with a credit card and you wake up in the morning and your business has grown, it's so different to recruitment where you earn every dollar in real time. So I'm starting to take it more seriously, moving it to a new platform. There's about 50 hours of recruitment training we've recently launched the rookie program, which I think is 8 or 9 hours for your newbies. There's a lot of stuff for recruiters on key skills. And there's a lot, the sort of stuff we've spoken about for managers and for owners, there's a lot on there as well. I'm also bringing in outside speakers, because honestly, it's 90% me. But I'm adding other people, give it a different voice, and putting on a new platform, which is much more sophisticated. So I think it's, you know, I wouldn't say to anyone, buy the Savage Academy. It's a subscription. You pay quarterly. You can get out of it any quarter. Buy that, and then that solved your training problems. It's not that. It's a tool, right? But it's a tool that you would use in the way of get a group to watch it, stop every few minutes, discuss, role play. You still got to train your people. You still got to develop them. But there's a lot of great material that will give you a foundation. So that's what the Academy is around. And, it's a subscription. It's very modest, actually, price-wise, I think. It's quarterly. So, you know, you don't have to subscribe for 2 years or anything.
You're not committing to the long term. No. And I think at times like this, that's really helpful. So I know I'm checking it out and I'm looking at putting a few of my bits in there for you, which I'll get across, which would be cool.
We, as I said, we are going to outside people and I asked Sean if he'd do a little bit on marketing because I think that's something we need more on. We'll have something from Sean in early next year.
Amazing. Greg, thank you so much. I always love these conversations. I'll be lying if I come in with an exact plan because I don't think I need to with you. I think we just hit it off and chat and it goes into different directions. But I want to finish by saying, look, I think the advice, the two things I took from today was profitability and cost per head and per every employee. I think that cost and margin is something I don't think many people, I've not heard anyone else mention it. And I'm sure there's plenty of people that look at it, but I think there's a lot of people listening that won't look at it. And that was really useful. And then the bit around, you know, your client activity, regardless of whether this recession is that deep, it's not going to do you any harm, especially the biggest challenge is going to be that big workforce that came in the last 18 months who've never done it. And you know, there's a hell of a lot of work to do, but I'm really optimistic personally about it.
Yeah, look, I think the recruitment industry is in as good a shape as it's ever been. I think clients need us more than they ever have done before. Mm. I think there's great technologies coming in that are going to make our business more efficient, but the key influencing skills are still required. So I don't think a recruiter's job is under threat in itself. I think a lot of recruiters are under threat because they lack the influencing skills. They're just transactional. They will have a problem. On those metrics, I would direct your listeners to my blog, which is called The Savage Truth. And if you go to the blog and you search productivity or metrics, I've actually prepared a benchmarking spreadsheet of the 12 key ratios I look at, including those ones we spoke about shortly. Yeah. And I've put best practice. So it's all there. That's free. That's not anything you buy. It's all there free. Obviously, I've got much more detail on my various academies. But that is a very, very useful, frankly, document. And it's quite simple. All my clients, we start our board meeting, show me.
Wow.
Show me. And they are so into it now, they will tell me way before. I'll see them in the street and they'll say, you know, I think somebody told me that they listened to Simon and he was quoting like, we fill one job out of two and all that stuff. That's all part of it, right? It's just understanding the trend, and it's trending that I love. You want to see it month by month because it's like a pilot driving a plane, and that, you might say that's a bit dramatic, but it is. He or she's got a dashboard and they can see they're going to run into a mountain before they hit the mountain because they've got radar, and they can see temperature or pressures dropping in the cabin before people get unconscious. So they can do something about it. That's what these things are for. They're trending so you can see issues before they become gigantic and act. And that's what so few people in business probably, but definitely in recruitment, they don't do. They act after the horse has bolted. I think I'm mixing a few metaphors there, but they act when it's too late.
Greg, this will be going out in the new year, but what's your plans for Christmas? Finish off with a bit of festive chat.
I travel a lot. So I'm spending Christmas home in Sydney with my family. I will go to my brother's this year. He's got three adult kids. I've got three adult kids. You can imagine 10 savages in a room. Give you some context. I don't get a word in edgeways. Oh, wow. So there's that. But then in January, because of course, as you know, that's midsummer. Yeah. We'll go down the coast about 2 hours and a very quiet little town, beach.
A couple of weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. Might come back for a day or two, but it's only 2 hours, so I'll go back. Typically, I try not to do too much work until Australia Day, which is January the 26th.
Wow, that's a big break. I'm pretty jealous.
Well, I'm 65 years old next month, mate, so I deserve it.
I think there's a lot of Aussies that are similar. I think they do take January pretty relaxed and it kind of kicks in mid to late.
It's not the way it used to be, but it is our big holiday. You know, you try and get anything done in London in August, there's no one there, right? So it's the same.
Yeah. Do you know what? This month's pretty relentless. Normally December slows down, especially in London. It's just about beers and lunches and coffees. But this month, I'm feeling it's busier than ever. But does that question, even my own business, I'm thinking we're trying to close everything off. You know, we're trying to get rid of everything we've got on our books and we're trying to get all the, are we building new stuff for January yet? I'm you're making me think shit, you know, and I wanted to go and get those levers out now in the next couple of hours and push my people a little bit harder.
Yeah, you know, I don't know enough about your business model, but you will have metrics that are just as telling as, you know, and you probably know what they are. Okay. And I encourage you to track them monthly and, because what it does is it just cuts through the rhetoric, and we're great bullshitters in this industry, and we can fool ourselves into thinking because our revenue's climbing, we're doing well, but these sorts of ratios and metrics, they don't lie, right? They just tell you, I need to look at that. It's very good. And so few people do it. It's a big differentiator, and I think most of my clients have benefited greatly from harnessing that.
I'm sure. Final question: when are you in London? When can we get you?
Well, actually, it's funny. Well, I'll tell you two things. I come to London in March because I've been invited to speak. As I told you, that often happens. And usually I say, I live in Sydney. It's going to cost a lot of money for me to go there. And usually they go, oh, yeah, I mean, we never thought of that. But I'm going to speak at the Recruitment Expo, which is in London in March.
Yeah, I'll be there.
And I'll also catch up with my friends at the REC and go and see my clients in London. So I'll be there for that. And then I'm coming back in September because I have written a new book and it's being launched in Australia in August. And I'm doing a speaking tour around the whole of the UK through the REC in September, which, as you would know, because you're such a big rugby fan, is just at the beginning of the Rugby World Cup. So when I've done that tour, I'll be going to France with my wife and we will be watching the rugby, which next year I'm not too optimistic about because there's some strong teams from the north.
Eddie Jones been talking to Rugby Australia last night about coming back.
Yeah, well, I mean, we shouldn't get too much off track because most of your listeners wouldn't be interested, but I think they made a mistake firing him at this late stage. I don't think it helps England's cause, but they'll be good. France will be good. Ireland will be good. So there's a lot of good teams from the Northern Hemisphere this time around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Greg, thank you so much. I'll personally be seeing you in March. I'll be there. I'll be getting the new book as well. But look, we'll make sure everything's connected. If anyone wants to speak to you, I'm sure they'll reach out to you via the appropriate channels. They'll look at the different platforms and we'll no doubt get you on again in the future. Have a wonderful Christmas. Have a great break. And thanks so much again.
Yes. Thank you, Sean, for having me on your show. Well done on all the work you're doing. Well done. I know you've got a business and that's why you drive it, but you are doing something that's valuable for the industry in its own right because we need people to understand what you sell and what you teach. So well done on that. And have a good Christmas yourself. And we'll catch up in London. You can tell me whether anyone's ever watched this thing that we've done.
They will do. Cheers, buddy. Thank you, as always, for listening to today's show. I truly, truly hope that you got value from it. That's the only reason I take time every week is to ensure that my audience, future and existing recruitment owners are learning from each other to make this industry that I love so much stronger. Today's episode was brought to you by Hoxo Media. I am the CEO and founder of Hoxo Media, and we are the world's leading content marketing and personal branding agency for recruitment businesses specifically. So we are working with over 200 agencies and 2,000 recruiters right now, both managing the brands, producing content, building written video podcast content for niche recruitment agencies all over the world, as well as coaching at a desk level individual recruiters in your businesses how to be better on LinkedIn. That's how to brand themselves. That's how to produce content. That's how to use the opportunity on LinkedIn to get traffic to their profiles and turn that into business. We're coaching people all over the world every single day. If any of that sounds of interest, please do visit www.hoxomedia.com or drop me, Sean Anderson, a personal message on LinkedIn. I would love to talk to you. I'll see you soon.